This is the PubRight Podcast, a service of the Arbortex community.
Today we have Robin Sloan from PTC and originally from the Arbortex team. Robin, you've been at Arbortex and PTC for a very long time.
Yes. In May of 1995, I initially joined our global services organization where I did consulting for 10 years. When PTC acquired Arbortex back in July of 2005, I moved from global services into the product management team where I now manage Arbortex Debtor, our data application, as well as our service manual application.
Right, the data at PTC.com, that goes to you?
Yes, it does, that email alias.
Do you get interesting questions? Do people know to use it?
I don't think many people do know to use it. A few years back, a lot of our internal folks would use it, but not any external customers.
Should they be?
Yeah, they can. As a matter of fact, a few years ago, when we were in the process of delivering our initial data application, we spent quite a bit of time talking with customers. We did a beta test where we sent out a beta release and received feedback on the features and functions that we were providing in the 5.3 release. And since that time, you know, we haven't really used that mail alias much since then.
All right. So, and you you built the data application, or you do project management for it?
I do product management for it. And so, yeah, I work with the customers to collect requirements, address issues related to usability, that type of thing, and then develop the requirements that go to engineering, and the engineering team develops the application. So we work really closely with I work really closely with customers and engineering to deliver the features and functions that come out with each release.
So we recently had Margaret talking to you from MicroMotion, and I think that between the three of us, we discovered that a lot of that knowledge about how the data application is constructed and built is also tribal in nature.
Yeah, I think that's what sets data apart from a lot of the other doc types. Most, if not all, of the other doc types that we deliver are just a DTD and a style sheet, where data is much more than that. There's a whole set of processing expectations, business and best practices that go along with using that application in a productive way. And that's the type of thing that's hard to really capture in documentation, where you're primarily just talking about how to use the different dialogues and tools that are within the editor. There's just a lot more knowledge that has to go along with using that application, you know, to do
so
it.
So where would somebody start if they're coming to this new?
Well, That's a very good question. We've tried to provide some introductions to data via tutorials. So if you look at our tool and you go up in help, there's a couple of tutorials on how to use the service manual application. And it talks about how to create, you know, topics and maps and how to insert the various constructs. But it's really much more than that. You know, moving from a book-based authoring paradigm to a topic-based one is just huge. And so it's all about business process reengineering and education. So from a product point of view, there's only so much that I can do as the product manager in the way of providing tutorials and help topics to help people get started. It really requires that someone engage with a very knowledgeable partner that can help kind of guide them through that process in a very efficient way. And selecting the right partner is really key to their success, in my opinion.
Well, that's true. traditionally, that knowledge is, has not been passed on to customers. That it's kept in the partner's domain.
Well, coming from global services, you know, being a consultant myself for 10 years, it really requires both the partner and the customer to engage, because the partner knows the type of information required to make the right decision, but the customer is the one that has that knowledge. So hopefully working together to do that business process reengineering, to do the data analysis, the customer should be learning alongside of that partner. But I don't think it's really possible for a customer to go out and take a bunch of training or buy a bunch of books and try to self-educate themselves and then go forth and move their entire organization over to DITA. I mean, it's not, you know, a problem unique to DITA. It's really with any large-scale publication project. If you're moving to DocBook, I would say the same thing. DITA tends to be a little bit more complex in that people just aren't accustomed to the authoring paradigm that you have to use with DITA, you know, working with maps, and there's quite a lot of metadata associated with the maps. That whole paradigm is somewhat foreign and intimidating to most folks. So, you know, a good partner will kind of give them the information that they need at the time they need it and kind of gradually educate them on, you know, what DITA is and how to use it as they kind of move through that process.
Oh, absolutely. I completely agree. It's sort of a gating factor in customer adoption, though, when that is all required to be passed person to person.
Right.
Right. So, and there's a difference between what you can learn about DITA generically, right? There's a lot of resources there. Lots of people are doing it. We're seeing it everywhere. And then there's the implementation that Arbortext requires, using the resolve document, making sure that your specialization works.
Right. Right. Before we move into that area, I did forget to mention that you're absolutely correct that there is a lot of information available, not just in the way of publications and books, but on the web. And I'm also a member of the DITA Adoption Technical Committee, where we're writing best practices documents and white papers on telling people, like, the best practices for using the glossary specialization, how to use a machine industry task specialization. So we are trying to get some of that tribal knowledge, some of that knowledge that went into the initial design of these data models, and trying to get it on paper and providing examples and best practices and processing expectations so people can get started. Also, as part of my participation, I participate in other subcommittees as well. But from a product manager point of view, what I'm trying to do is try to identify areas that are really difficult and try to provide some type of user interface that would assist the user in using these capabilities in an easy and straightforward way, something that doesn't require that you go and, you know, sit down and, you know, have to do 3 or 4 hours of training. Some of the things that we've done, for example, were in the product with 5.3, we came up with this column view for working with the metadata associated with the map. It looks a lot like a Excel spreadsheet where each of the attribute values are displayed in a column. So you could look at all of the file names at one time and edit them in that view. And the other thing that you mentioned, Liz, was this resolve document for editing and resolve document for styling. So what we call the RDE, the resolve document for editing, is a kind of intermediary type of window that brings together all of the topics in the map. And so if you're moving from a book-based paradigm into a topic-based one, and you're not comfortable working with one topic at a time, you can go to your map, create an RDE, and all of the topics that are in that map will show up in that one window. And there's some advantages to that. Like if you were doing a global find and replace or a global spell check, you don't have to open each of those topics individually. You can do it all in one place. And any changes that you make to any of those topics will be saved back to the original file.
And yeah, no, it's very, very useful.
Yeah, and so, you know, also some things that you may not know is that you can grab a selection of your maps. So if you're working in a book map and you want to just work with a chapter, you can select a chapter and create an RDE, and it contains only the content in that particular chapter. And you can also, yeah, and you can also print just that chapter as well. So you can grab...
Even better.
Yeah, so we're trying to do some things that are more in line with the way that people have done things in the past when they were working with books, trying to make that transition from books to topics much easier.
Nice. That's really great. The column view is also fantastic. We use that all the time, and I see customers using it regularly. That is an outstanding feature to have added.
Yeah, we really were pleased with the way that turned out. And as you may, well, you may not know that you can use the column view with any doc type, not just with Ditto. So if you were working with transactional XML, which tends to have a lot of metadata, so instead of having element content, you have attribute content, you can go into your DCF file, that document configuration file, and you can configure the column view to work with that doc type.
Yeah, no, I knew that. It is really handy
because
it's just such a simple view to look at.
Yeah, so people like working maybe with FO or something like that might find configuring the column view for that metadata may be helpful. Now, if you have a lot of different metadata, like 30, 40, 50 attributes, it may not work well in that case, but we're finding that it does tend to work well with most doc types, depending on the data model.
Where did the idea for the column view come from?
It was just, we have a very talented group of people here that have been working in the publishing world for ages. Most of our engineers have been with the company 15 to 20 years. And so it just comes from having worked with that kind of content. And I don't know who to attribute the initial design to, but it was a group of folks, both from the product management, engineering. We have a cross-functional team that works together every week. We have a weekly meeting. We bring in QA, documentation, global services, training, engineering, product management, and whoever else is interested in attending. And as we work through the requirements and the design for each of those capabilities, each person contributes to that overall design. And so I think why the column view has been so successful in the RDE is that you have not one person, but a whole group of people that are very talented kind of working together to deliver those capabilities.
Yeah, that's great. So let's talk more about the resolved document. That's something, getting that to work is, one of our customers is still trying to figure that out, Margaret. But it's really handy because when you're styling in particular, then you have sort of all the components that you're working with.
Yeah, I think why, from a configuration point of view, I mean, you have to do it once, and I'm trying to address that in our next release. The problem with configuring it is you're bringing elements from the map and the topic together into one doc type. So we don't have a single DTD that represents both maps and topics. Database is about as close as you can get, right? It allows for each of those various information types in a single document. But maps and topics are completely separate. So for both the RDE and the RDS, you're bringing those two worlds together. And so there's a little bit of configuration required to get those to work properly so that it recognizes any new specializations that you've added and it can validate your content against those specializations so that you know that when you run a completeness checker that all of the elements and attributes are in the proper order. We are hopefully in the next release going to remove that configuration by supporting multiple doc types within a single window. And so that'll hopefully make the configuration aspect a lot simpler. But before we move off of the issue of the RDE and the resolve document for styling, I do want to point out an important difference between the two. So the resolve document for editing is intended for authors of the information, so the people that work with the content day to day. You know, they want to edit, you know, all of the content in a chapter, maybe run, like I said, a spell check or find and replace, or just kind of get a view of everything in one window. Okay. Now, the resolve document for styling is a completely different thing altogether. It's a view intended for the style sheet developer, as the name kind of implies. And the biggest difference between the two is that the resolve document for styling is actually processed through the composition pipeline before it brings up that window with all your content. The composition pipeline does a couple of things. It pushes that metadata from the map into the topics. So if you've added additional metadata on the topic references, you know, using the column view, there's an additional filter in our pipeline. It pushes that metadata from the map into the topics. There's also a filter in the pipeline that creates the different links. So as you know, that there's a lot of what we call implicit links that are generated during composition. Links from, like, using the collection type or linking attributes, relationship tables, the hierarchical links that you have for the parent-child relationships. Sure. You know, all of those are auto-generated links, as well as the explicit links, like the related links that you may author in the bottom of a topic. So when you bring up that resolve document for styling, the topics look very different than they did in the original view. So that document you cannot change. You can't save any changes back to the topics because the topics have been modified. You wouldn't want to save that metadata and those links right. back into the topics. So what you can do with that file, though, is that you find a document that best represents your content collection, something kind of small, but represents all of the different contexts that you want to test against or style against, I should say. And you could save that off, and then you can add all of those little edge cases that you need to style against as well. So initially, the resolve document for styling, represents that map that you may be using, but you can create kind of the style sheet version that you just use for development. And then when you're using Styler, you would bring up your RDS, and then you would open Styler against the RDS. So with 5.4, you could only do that from a map or a book map. With 5.4, you can now do that from a topic. So you may want to have a separate style sheet for each of your information types. You may have a separate style sheet for concept, task, and reference. But what we're finding is that people are just developing a single style sheet that they use for both maps, book maps, and all the topics, information types. So. So there's a fair amount of flexibility on how you want to go about it. And that's not to say that you couldn't style against just a plain old topic that you bring up. What you lose, though, is that you don't really know what the style sheet sees, what it's being applied against in the pipeline. So that's the reason why you want to send that content through the pipeline first. The other thing it can be useful for, the RDS, is when you're working with links and you're trying to figure out potentially if you have a problem with the links that are being generated, you can pull up the RDS and you can see what links were generated and what metadata is on the links, as opposed to try to troubleshoot the links from like an HTML output, trying to kind of work your way back. So it can also be useful for troubleshooting things that happen during that composition process.
Absolutely. That was one of the questions I was going to ask you. One of the hardest things to do when you're creating style sheets is doing that sort of testing and making sure you've hit all the cases, that you've hit all the corners. And we're trying to figure out how to do that in a more automated fashion, and it's a difficult problem to solve.
Mm. Agreed.
Sounds like it would be easier with the RDF.
Yeah, it is, I think, easier with the RDF. Trying to simplify the style sheet creation process has definitely been a challenge that we've been trying to tackle for quite a while with Styler. But I think the problem lies in that people just don't appreciate the complexities of a really good style sheet. Not to say that they're hard and people should be afraid of them, but just having a good appreciation for the level of skill and effort required to do a proper job of developing a style sheet.
Absolutely. Do you have any hints that you give to new folks, internally or externally?
Well, yeah, I'm a big advocate of hiring people that are knowledgeable, that can kind of help you get started. Not to say that you couldn't do it on your own, but getting the proper training and, you know, getting some expert advice as you move through that process on your own is absolutely key to your success. So there's a lot of talented people out there that are self-starters, can pick up a book and get started, but really to be successful, they really need to have, you know, input from someone who really knows that area.
And so, absolutely. We also are very active in creating mentoring relationships and encouraging those across members in the Adeptors wider community. And we see a lot more success for people who get engaged in that way.
Yeah, and I think you just brought up a really good point. There's, you know, all these different forums that are out there where people can ask questions. And Arbortex just has a very faithful following of folks that are very generous with their time and their knowledge, you know, and it really makes me feel good to see, you know, that they are kind of helping the newer folks kind of get up to speed and helping them out in that process. And so it's a very, you know, good way to kind of get started in this whole area of XML. I think, you know, what we're finding, though, is that people that are moving from a more word processing type environment into something like Ditta, that's a really big step.
It is.
You know, and I can't imagine, I mean, I've been in the industry for 20 some years. I won't tell you how many exactly, but it's been a while. I can't imagine going from when I got started, we were converting from Interleaf into HTML.
Right.
And that just by itself was just a big task. There wasn't any domain knowledge. There weren't people in the industry. I was one of the people that was just kind of out there on the bleeding edge, and it was tough. And, you know, it's, you know, over the years, of course, I've learned, and but I can't imagine going from something like Frame and going right into Ditta by yourself. It's a daunting. I don't know why people don't really realize that they really need to have somebody take them through that process to be successful. But
it's misleading. You've got the Ditta Open Toolkit. You've got all this information out there. It seems that it'll be a lot easier than it is, I think.
Yeah, well, you know, I think one of the things that people need to appreciate is that how much value they're getting just by starting with Ditta and not starting from scratch. You know, back, you know, when I got started, you had to write your own DTD and you had to write your own strategy, and none of the tools supported any of the things that you needed to do. So it was all ground up development, very timely, very costly, you know, to get started. Well, then along came DocBook, which was, you know, a great doc type, still is a great doc type. It's a good starting point, but we never, ever used DocBook just straight out of the box. We always started with that and then kind of layered on any kind of customizations the customer required. Because, you know, the business process is so key to the data model. You're just not modeling the words on a page. You're modeling a process. And so we'd always have we didn't call it specialize, and we always had to customize DocBook. But with Ditta, all of the kind of trials and problems that people have encountered over the last probably 10, 15 years, they've come up with a data model that tends to address a lot of the problems that people were having. And so just by starting with Ditta, I mean, they're getting a huge leg up on getting started, and plus it kind of envelops all of the best practices of the industry. And that's why I'm a big advocate of Ditta. It's not because, I'm responsible for the Ditta application here at PTC, but it's just that I can see the value of starting with an industry standard. And, the way that publishing is going, to kind of get ahead of myself a little bit here, but in order to do kind of this, configuration-based delivery of information, that kind of this just, delivering information that's tailored to a particular customer. You can't do that with a book. You can't give somebody a PDF file and say, well, here, sift through that and find the procedure, required to disassemble a piece of equipment or a parts list for a particular assembly.
Yeah.
It has to be topic-oriented, and so in order to do kind of what I call next generation of publishing, you have to start with topic-oriented information that has a lot of metadata associated with it so that you can publish it out and then retrieve it in a very customized way.
Absolutely. I don't see really anyone starting anywhere else at this point.
Yeah. I'd share that opinion as well.
Yeah. So the service manual application, I don't know that everybody knows that that's a Ditta specialization.
Yeah, well, good question. So how that kind of came about was our sales department came to product management and said, hey, we need an application that we can get our customers up and running, very quickly, that addresses, 80, 90% of what they want to do. And so there was a number of different things that we could have started with, owner's manual, installation guide. But, we typically are working a lot with manufacturing companies. So they wanted a service manual application. And what's different about a service manual application is all the diagnostic information. And so what we did was we started with Ditta, and we created some specializations that were kind of more tailored to service-related information, including diagnostics, fold-outs, plates, part numbers, that kind of side-by-side representation that you typically see where you have the steps that look like they're in column one and all the graphics show up in column two, so that you could group a collection of steps with a graphic or several graphics for that matter. And so I think it was a year and a half ago, we delivered a service manual application along with our product. And so, as you mentioned, it's built on top of Ditta, and it just contains some additional specializations as well as a style sheet and some other capabilities for watermarks, some ability to configure like the placement of the figure titles. You can go into an external file and say, hey, I want my figure titles to appear above or below my images, that type of thing. So just trying to give people a little jump start on getting started with service manuals. And hopefully, and I can only say hopefully because I can't promise anything for our next release, but our next release, which is, we have these code names, it's called Pine. Because we don't know if it's going to be 5.4, 5.5, or 6.0.
Right.
And so we call it our Pine Project. In Pine, we're planning to deliver a more generic TechDoc application where you could deliver, create and deliver any of those document types, owners, service,
nice.
Installation. And in addition to that, a parts catalog application. So,
oh, that would be nice.
Yeah, and so we've already done our prototype for parts catalog and our style sheets, and so we've got a good start there. And hopefully kind of round out our offering around kind of technical related information. It's not just targeted to manufacturing companies, but it...
No, not at all.
But hopefully it'll be a good start. We're really focused on the configuration of these variable type things that, you know, a customer would need. So the whole kind of theme for our Pine release related to this application is just ease of configuration, just making it as simple and straightforward as we possibly can. We like to make it so that, you know, instead of taking 6 months to get people up and running, that we can get them up and running in 2 to 3 months' time, and which is very, you know, aggressive as far as timelines. But trying to kind of lower that barrier to adoption. You know, we have really great tools around moving your legacy data from the legacy formats into XML. In 5.4, we greatly improved our copy-paste from Word. Before, when you know, would copy-paste from Word, you kind of get a blob.
Right.
And now if you grab...
Yeah, no, that's a really nice feature.
Yeah, you can take and grab, you know, a pair, a list, a table, some very detailed kind of formatted content in Word and paste it into your application. And as long as your DCF file is set up properly, it will create all of that structure for you. And so for the people that don't have a lot of legacy data, or they just have these kind of random documents that they want to bring over, they can leverage that new capability. So we're trying to just really help people kind of get started, kind of, you know, make it easier for them to work with maybe content that they're getting from engineering, where the engineering doesn't really want to get on board with XML. But they can take and get that Word content into XML in a simple and straightforward way.
Excellent. That reminds me, does that also work for FrameMaker, or is that coming?
RTF.
You know.
We paste RTF.
Okay.
From the clipboard. So as long as the application puts RTF on the clipboard, we can put that into your document.
Nice.
Yeah.
Very nice. Wow, that word copy and paste, when we saw that in June, was just amazing. It works unbelievably well.
Yeah. The 5.4 release had so many great things. I mean, I could talk for hours. It was, you know, when we started to do the training and develop our presentations for our PTC user conference back in June, that's when we really realized how much stuff we really had, how much really good stuff that was in the product. We kind of got all excited again. You know, the whole ability, you know, we have that ActiveX control, and we could save that for another day. But
absolutely,
I would love to talk to you about some of the other capabilities that are just really amazing.
Well, we'll set up another call for a couple of months from now.
Okay.
And we'll talk about those. Of course, I know that everybody will enjoy hearing that for sure. So I got two more questions.
Okay.
One, what's your most common customer question? What do you get most often?
I don't know.
Hmm.
I don't think there's, you know, a common... I can't answer that question right now.
Wow. I kind of figured there'd be at least one that you get kind of regularly.
No.
But not even. Wow.
If I did, I'd be worried because I wasn't doing my job. I'm doing my job so well.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. That means that the training and the documentation and the access to everybody really covers most everything that folks need to do, and that's fantastic.
Yeah, plus two. I mean, I'm really impressed with the amount of knowledge that the people I deal with have. And I think that's a large part of it. You know, and that a lot of the people that are our largest, biggest advocates of DITA are very talented, knowledgeable people, and quite capable of, you know, kind of figuring most of it out on their own. So there's not really a common question. I do a lot of education internally where, for example, with the DITA 1.2, there's a new glossary specialization. You think, oh, well, that's pretty simple, terms and definitions. Well, no, it's not. There's this whole addition to that specialization that you can have these back-end processes that pull stuff into like a terminology database. And so trying to come up with a strategy on how to leverage that data model in the most efficient way. So what we do internally is I have like the perfect test bed. We've moved all of our documentation team and our two of our training teams. So we have internal and external training. They all use DITA. And we also use DITA to develop our online help now. And yes. So I end up fielding a lot of questions internally, which end up resulting in a better product at the end of the day. And I think that's why, you know, where we are with our products today is we've had such heavy use of DITA within the company internally. In order for us just to deliver a product, we have to have really good support. And so,
right. When did you guys make that switch over?
So when PTC acquired Arbortex back in 2005, we started to move into DITA for documentation. And that we did a pilot project with the people developing the Windchill documentation. So we did a pilot with there. And internally, we converted our author-facing documentation from DocBook to DITA in the 5.4 release. And we published that content using our digital media publisher product, which has an API that allows you to do like context-sensitive retrieval of topics. So we used two of our capabilities, DITA along with DMP, to now create this new help center type approach that also is used for our context-sensitive help. So if you pull up a dialogue and you hit help, it actually launches the help center and it calls into a particular topic. And so we did a couple of things with 5.4.
Yeah, the help center is good. We get a lot of calls where people have seen it, they like it, they want to know how to do that.
Yeah, it's a great product. Yeah.
It is fabulous. Very cool. I had something else, and now I can't remember what it was.
You were asking.
It's not going to come back to me.
You asked me what the most common question I got was. And
yeah.
And I think it was something along those lines.
That's cool. I don't know. We went in a different direction, and then I
took you down a
was
rattle.
Paying attention and didn't write it down.
Well, there's just so much good stuff to talk about. So
there really is. Well, Will should do it more often.
Yes.
That would be great. You know, we'll pick a new topic and talk about that for a while, which is cool.
Okay.
Yeah, because the idea behind this is just to start putting that information out of our heads and into other people's heads.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, the better educated our customers are, the better they can use our tools and provide us the type of feedback that we need to continue to improve the tools. And
right.
I don't know if people are aware of the fact that, you know, that they need to talk to product management about the problems that they're encountering and let us know so that we can address them in some way. And so if you have issues or questions, you know, please just let us know. I'd be happy to address them. And you can contact me. My name, again, is Robin Sloan. My email address is rsloan@ptc.com. Or you can dial me here in Ann Arbor. I'm in the Eastern Time Zone at 734-997-0200. And that puts you through to the front desk. And if I'm not in, you can always ask to talk to another product manager.
Excellent. And that brings us back around to the technical committees.
Yes.
We encourage customers to sit on that and think that that's a huge benefit of being an Arbortex customer, is that you actually have direct feedback to improve the product.
Right. So you're talking about the ArborTech's technical committees. So
yes.
Just a little bit more information about that is twice a year we get together, once in January, once in June. The January TCs are typically virtual, meaning that it's all done via webinar-type environment, mm-hmm. whereas the TCs in June are held at the user conference. And we typically pick about a handful of topics to talk about, things that we're really interested in understanding more about how customers do things. For example, we had one on parts catalogs. We have ones on styling, all different topics. And you can participate in those TCs and contribute your requirements. And the benefit to contributing and providing input is that when we start to work on product improvements, we can make sure to address your specific requirements. So it's a really good way of influencing the direction of the product, of letting us know which things are important to you. And as they say, you know, the squeaky wheel gets the oil. The customers that are the most vocal, and not hopefully in a constructive way, we listen, and you know, we're very interested in understanding the challenges that you have. What types of things would improve, you know, our products, improve your productivity? So we're definitely have a lot of different avenues that people can provide the input. You know, you can file enhancement requests, you can email us, call us, you can participate in the TCs. Shortly, I'm going to be putting together an advisory council to get input on the products. It's typically like a variety of users, some people that are very novice, some people that are very expert, so I can get a feel for both sides. And if you have other suggestions on how we might collect input, I'm open to hearing those as well.
That's one of the, back in the day, that and the wide available community were two of the biggest reasons that we chose ArborText way back when.
Yeah, and hopefully you'll see more ArborText-related activities over this next year.
Absolutely.
We understand that, you know, that the whole ArborText product line hasn't been as visible as it could be or should be. And so hopefully we'll make it easier for people to get in touch with us and know the different avenues that they can provide feedback.
Fabulous. I think we're all working to spread the word, as it were, and knowledge and get everyone successful at what they do without needing to have someone always there to help them.
Right.
Yeah, which is great over time. Because in the end, customers are the ones who want to control that, and we want them capable of doing so.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Exactly.
And that's why I appreciate you setting up this podcast, giving me the opportunity.
All right. Well, we'll talk often, I think, over the next several months. And because I would love to have you talk about all the things in 5.4. I think that would be a great call. And as we come up with new, that ActiveX control would be cool. And I'm going to have to get Sam to do the deployment kit, because I don't think still no one's really, really understands how completely revolutionary that is going to be.
Yeah, it is true. It'd be better done in a webcast as opposed to a podcast.
Oh, we can do that.
Sweet.
We're doing that too. Yeah.
I'll see what I can do.
All right, excellent. Thank you so much, Robin. I appreciate your taking time to talk with me today.
All right, well, thank you, Liz.
All right, bye.
Bye.
The PubRide Podcast is a production of Single Sourcing Solutions in San Jose, California. Copyright 2009. Single Sourcing Solutions.